is key for a successful community. Get involved. This is Metro Talk with Jerry Phillips.
And we continue on our first Sunday as we get into the issues of the nation. Having talked with Senator George Allen this morning on the congressional agenda of Metro Talk, now we turn to our first Sunday roundtable debate with our politicians, and they are here this morning and ready to debate. And if you look at this morning's news headlines, and not only the Washington Post, but the New York Times, the LA Times, and right across the country, all the Washington Times, whatever name, you will see a lot of issues dealing with what's happening in the country today as we look towards the new year, 2003. A new Congress is at hand, the 108th Congress. The Washington Post, as I said to Senator Allen earlier this morning, an age ends as two legends exit. This is the headline speaking about Strom Thurmond and Jesse Helms. They are exiting, and of course, what that really means to the Republican Party, what does it mean to the Congress itself? Well, there are a lot of topics. Economic stimulus bill is the one topic that we're really going to have to deal with. And may I introduce my panelists this morning? They are right here, Dana Jones.
Good morning.
Democrat, Jim Pomeroy.
Good morning.
Republican, Eric Mickelson.
Hello, Jerry.
Green Party. And from the Libertarian Party, the one and only that Pat and Alexandra just loves all the time, none other than Nick Sawalk.
Good morning, Jerry.
And we're missing Emily Leffler, who is an independent. She won't be here. I think she's out of town this week, so she called to let us know. But anyway, welcome everybody to Metro Talk.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Happy New Year.
I take it you had a good holiday and everything, huh?
Absolutely.
Very good.
Good. And folks, please give us a call at 301-230-0980, #980, in the Verizon Wireless System. Absolutely free call. This is one of the only shows that you can really disagree with people on. So call up and just disagree, as you'll find out, because the opinions of these various political, ideological paths. Do you like that?
Sounds good to me.
Does that sound good to you?
Okay. Fair enough.
All right, let's start off with the economic stimulus bill to strengthen the economy. The White House will release much of it this Tuesday as President Bush speaks in Chicago. But already, leaks from the White House, leaks, Dana, from the White House have come out showing that this could be interpreted as a means of helping not only kids from grades 3 to 8 and education, but it could really help the rich. And I'm going to turn to Eric Mickelson, because I know, Eric, you got a lot to say about it.
Well, Jerry, you know, it's not really surprising to me that the administration would be trying to, again, further enrich the folks who it sees as its key allies. And, I mean, if you look at the folks from the American Enterprise Institute and some of the other conservative think tanks who have backed President Bush since he began running, this agenda was very narrowly under the surface all along. So, again, I think the issue is, you know, are a lot of the middle class and working class folks who voted for President Bush thinking that, you know, he was going to alleviate their tax burden, going to get a rude wake-up call when the tax bill comes in the next couple of years.
Jim Pomeroy, is this possible? Will this really work from what we're hearing so far about the stimulus package? Let me say this. We're facing a serious recession, given the fact that there's 7% unemployment in the country, almost 7%, a threat of a war, which is going to be very costly if we do go to Iraq or wherever, and decrease in consumer buying. 30 years, this was the worst holiday buying in 30 years, plus services and budget cuts. They're talking about across the board in the states, the governor's offices, as well as in the Congress. Is this the time you talk about tax cuts?
Well, this is absolutely the time to talk about tax cuts.
Well,
when you have a potential economic recession and when you have consumer confidence down, that is when you cut taxes to put more money back into the economy. And these states that are complaining about a budget deficits, most of them, including Virginia, where I'm from, they're whining about a budget that's been bloated for years. And now they can't have a double-digit increase in government spending every year, so they cry about how it's a cut. The federal government now is spending more money and will spend more money next year than it ever has before. When we're talking about tax cuts, we're only talking about a very small part of the economy, and I certainly support tax cuts, and I think anybody who doesn't want to see a deep economic recession would want to support putting more money back into the economy.
Dana, should people really be angry right now, I mean, kicking their heels up because... if you're a working middle-class person, it might not be for you.
Are we surprised at all? Let's see. This tax plan would take us back about 70 years, and the poor aren't poor enough. Let's tax them some more. What's so interesting and what I like to think about regarding all of this is that when President Bush appointed successor Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill with the new Treasury Secretary John Snow, basically, the package has already been crafted without any input of him. Where does the policy come from? Where does this policy come from? Let's talk about K Street.
Actually, I'd like to find out first where exactly we're supposedly increasing the taxes on the poor. Where does that come from? That's absolutely untrue. There's absolutely nothing about that in Bush's tax plan whatsoever. So I'd like to know more about that.
Paper called the Washington Post.
There you go.
Quote some of it for me. Tell me exactly where in the plan that there's any increase in taxes on the poor.
Can I get 2 cents in? Thank you. From the Washington Post article, Monday, December the 16th, the title is New Tax Plan May Bring Shift in Burden. Economists at the Treasury Department are drafting new ways to calculate the distribution of tax burdens among different income classes, which are expected to highlight what administration officials are saying, a rising tax burden on the rich and a declining burden on the poor. Well, the advisors in the White House now preparing a report detailing concentration of the tax burden so that the burden is on the affluent, and they definitely want to face more of the burden on those who are not so affluent.
But that's different than what Dana said. Dana said we're supposedly raising taxes on the poor. That's untrue. What the Post is trying to say is that if you cut taxes on the rich and middle class, that the percentage of taxes paid by the poor will go up without them actually paying any more. Quite frankly, I support cutting taxes for the middle class. I think that's an important thing, and it helps the economy.
Let's turn to Nicholas Sawalk.
Well, you know, far be it from me to oppose any tax cuts, because really, as libertarians, we believe that you should keep more of the money that you earn. I mean, that's pretty basic stuff. But the whole idea of doing these tax cuts without cutting government spending, and in fact increasing government spending, as this economic stimulus bill likely do, is very similar to me or any of, you know, the people listening taking a pay cut at their job and then going out with their credit cards and buying some new clothes and a new car because, gosh, let's stimulate something. While the American people are tightening their belts, where is it with the federal government tightening their belt? As Jim had pointed out, the federal budget's more bloated than it's ever been. And the idea of taxing or lowering the tax burden at the same time as raising spending is essentially like the government taking a credit card that we're backing and saying, gosh, let's go buy some new clothes and some new cars.
Well, I mean, I would concur that the federal government spends too much, and I think that President Bush is trying to hold the line on it, but unfortunately he has to deal with the Democratic Party also, and they want to increase spending.
No one wants to increase taxes. Everyone is for cutting taxes.
Well, Governor Warner in Virginia was certainly for increasing taxes by the time we beat him.
Excuse me. No one is against cuts. No, I don't want any tax cuts. No one would say that. Let's just make sure that we give them to the right people. We give them to people who can afford it. We don't give excess tax to those who can't afford it. And, you know, it's very interesting. The unemployment rate is so high. There's so many people looking for jobs they can't find it. We have the most popular food bank in Atlanta who's been taking food from people for years and years and years, now calling them saying, I need that food back because I don't have a job and I can't feed my family. There are larger issues at hand.
Who are the right people?
No, I think the middle class deserves tax cuts, and poor families don't need to be taxed more. And I think I would think that the Republicans would agree with that. So when we see this plan come out, the economic stimulus plan, in its entirety, because these are leaks, as Jerry had said, we will see exactly who this is on the backs of.
I just want to make sure that when the tax cuts come around that I'm on the right people list.
Well, I mean, I think, you
That's
know...
Late.
Well, I think maybe I actually have a little bit of a disagreement with Dana. I think in the current economic climate that actually tax cuts for anyone don't really make sense. I think that if you look at Maryland's current projected deficit of about $1.8 billion, you know, a large portion of that is the result of the administration and frankly, Democrats who were in the state house, you know, doing a tax cut for the citizens of Maryland. I'm a citizen of Maryland, but I at the same time, I, you know, value the budget and the state being balanced. And they predicted that, you know, the economic good times of the mid-90s were going to continue on forever. And I just think it was, you know, in the short term, maybe they thought it was going to be good for their their electoral prospects, but it turned out to sort of bite them.
Our telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon wireless system. The lines are open and Americans should call in and tell us whether you support the president's tax stimulus bill or whether you feel that you're going to be taxed more. And that is the basic question.
I think there's a basic point that needs to be made here. Just, you know, some common sense. You can't spend money you don't have. The government can spend money they don't have because they don't make money anyway. They take money from us. So the idea of an economic stimulus bill increasing our economic prospects by them spending money that they're going to take from us later is just ludicrous on the face of it, especially if they're increasing spending. The actual rate of spending is increasing, and they're taking more money from a depressed economy from a bunch of us who are trying to tighten our belts.
Well, this will be $300 billion over the next 10 years, right?
Right. Well, what this does is, I mean, this is not going to raise taxes on anybody. Let me clear this up right now.
Now.
This is not raising taxes on anybody. This is a
not
tax
raising, but what
cut.
About tax breaks?
This is a tax cut.
What about, but the
those
one
are good
word,
things. Tax cuts are good things.
But the one word I have not heard this morning, not only here, but even in the news stuff we've researched, no one's using the word breaks anymore for those who are in corporate structure. And that was the talk this week.
Oh, no.
When the leaks came out, that was the accusation against the stimulus plan.
This is going to be a broad-based tax cut. President Bush has already instituted broad-based tax cuts, and they have stimulated the economy. This will continue to do so. I agree that we need to cut back on government spending. And in fact, the miracle of tax cuts is when you do that, it increases, ends up increasing the amount of money coming into the government. And all you have to do is hold down the rate of increase in spending, and you can cut the deficit, as the Republicans showed after the 1994 takeover of Congress.
Our panelists are James Pomeroy, Republican, Dana Jones, Democrat, Eric Mickelson, Green Party, and Libertarian Nick Sawalk. They're here this morning to answer your questions or to answer your comments and to present the individual ideological paths, as I like using that term. I opened up with that. And 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon wireless system. Our lines are open. How do you feel about the stimulus plan on the fact that we are now getting ready to see higher gas prices because of what's happening in Venezuela? We are finding that there's uncertainty there. And in some states, gas has already, that's regular, gone up 8 cents. Anyway, 301-230-0980, pound 980 on Verizon. Eli in Arlington, Virginia, good morning.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. And by the way, it's a very interesting discussion, even earlier on as well. I have a proposal for everybody on your panel, which is old, yet it is startling in this discussion that nobody's really raised it except perhaps a libertarian fellow. Why not, before there are any tax cuts or spending increases, have a third party, for instance, a Congressional Budget Office, and by the way, another third party would be the Concord Coalition, which believes in balanced budgets, come in and say, you tell us where you are going to stop spending or cut spending in order to support tax cuts, and or if you are going to institute new programs, where you are going to raise the taxes, and do that first. Hold the politicians' feet to the fire and have them fully fund either the tax cuts or the spending increases.
Okay.
I will hang up and listen. I wanted to make it short, Jerry. I think you appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Eli. I appreciate that.
I completely agree with Eli. I think that if nothing else, we need transparency in where the money's going and where they plan to get the money from.
And let's point out also the reason that the Democrats oppose President Bush's tax cuts is not so that they can reduce the deficit.
You say just the Democrats, but what about
the
Democratic leadership?
Because
the Democratic leadership is the only group standing in the way of President Bush's tax cuts.
Is that right?
The leadership of the Democratic Party, thank goodness, they're not in the majority.
He's really like a little rhetoric. You know, you just wind them up in the back and you just
Give me a list of Dana. Give me a list of tax cuts you would support.
I've already stated it over and over again.
You have not given me a single instance of a tax cut. You use broad brushes.
Also, it's very important to also realize is that we have to wait for this to come out. These are leaks, as Jerry had said. And it's going to have to be something quite large. And why do I say it's going to have to be something broad-based, and why the White House should be watching exactly what they're doing? President Bush's approval rating has dropped. So is the
We're
going to
get into that in a second. Let's take some more calls on the tax thing, and let's go and talk with Taylor in Bethesda.
How you doing?
Fine.
Listen, one of the things which I find rather amusing is that the Democrats seem to have, when they come into office, the economy seems to take off, and the Republicans who represent business tend to depress the economy. John Maynard Keynes, his idea of economic stimulation was for the government to prime the business sector with monetary support so that it could come out of the doldrums. Now, the Republicans try to give tax cuts, but that undercuts the revenue base for programs. I think the Democrats have the right idea, and I think the Republicans, I don't want to go into a rich, poor dichotomy. I think that becomes literally beat the dead horse with that. I mean, it's obvious, it's always been so. I think it's a very bad mistake to do that.
All right. Hey, I appreciate your call, Mr. Taylor. In Bethesda, right?
Right, that's right.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
He brings up a point that average people think about the two-party system. I'm going to turn to the alternative right now, and Eric Mickelson, help us out.
Jerry, I think he does bring up some good points. I think another interesting point is brought up in the article that you referenced earlier in the Post, where William Beach from the Heritage Foundation, who's one of President Bush's supporters for these tax cuts, says, and I quote, "Do I allow defense spending to offset my income taxes since I like to be defended? Do I allow road taxes to offset my profits, taxes because I like to use the roads?" He asked. If you start down that road, it's hard to see anything as taxes. And I think this is a question. We'd all like to have more money in our pockets, but I think we also need to recognize the services that we get in return for paying taxes. I mean, you know, there's people like to inflate the notion that our taxes are going to pay, you know, for welfare queens driving around in Cadillacs or whatever, when in fact, a small portion of our tax money does go to social service programs, but a very small
when you
portion.
Think about the war, come on, Jim, when you think about the fact that we're talking about going to just the cost of preparing for conflict by the United States Armed Services is a big price.
Well, and that absolutely cannot be described as government waste, because the military is one of the few things that the government should be doing.
Why?
Be defending the borders, taking nuclear weapons away from madmen. I mean, I'll pay taxes for that. I don't like taxes, but I'll pay taxes to get rid of a terrorist around the world.
Let's go to Ronald in Alexandria. Good morning, Ronald.
Yeah, the lady representing the Democratic Party was asking the gentleman representing the Republican Party a question, and they seem to be always able to cut people off before they answer the question. She was asking him something about, well, who comes up with these ideas and where these ideas come from. If she would rephrase that question to him, I would like to hear him answer that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
Actually, what I was talking about was the fact that Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill has stepped down. And while the new Treasury Secretary, John Snow, will be asked to pretty much push on the public tax cuts, The stimulus package that we're talking about had already been crafted without the need of any input. And his role as Treasury Secretary is to enforce and come up with policy for the cabinet in which he heads. Who then is making these policies? If Jon Snow is just now coming in, everything has already been done. Who exactly is doing that?
Well, that's a very simple answer. George Bush. President Bush is coming in and making these decisions. That's his job, and
he has pushing
absolutely. You know what? George Bush knows that tax cuts are good, and he has a wide staff underneath him. He provides direction, and they come up with the code and so on, the bills that do what he wants. But this is a very strong plan. the president's campaigned on this before, and he'll campaign on it again.
Where does this question come from, and why I brought this up? It was really talked about in detail in a magazine called Esquire. You're a Republican, you may not know what that magazine is. And what that is they're talking about exactly two White House staffers who went kind of undercover, if you will, or anonymous, talking about the fact that there was no policy shop in the White House. Where is this coming from? K Street. Lobbyists.
I know it may be shocking to you that the president has some good ideas and the president is pushing them, and it doesn't take a billion staff members to have
some. But what I think Dana is asking is Wall Street really playing a big part? And corporate America, is it playing? And that came out yesterday in a lot of the news reports based on what came out of the White House on the stimulus bill. Has the White House turned to Wall Street? Has the White House turned to big corporates to now pay them back for what? 2 years of giving support to the government.
Well, the president's original broad-based tax cut for everyone isn't something that was supported by any particular special interest. People who like lower taxes support it, and that includes businesses also.
Telephone number 301-230-0980, #980 in the Verizon Wireless System. As we talk politics this morning on our first Sunday roundtable debate, every first Sunday you can join us, and this is the factory of the District of Columbia. It is a political town, and we have to kind of share in and really set the pace as to where we're going. If you look at this morning's, I don't mean to single out the Washington Post all the time, but I think they put it right in when you talk about the ending age of legends, the change over in the Republican Party, the 108th Congress coming in. We're talking about war. We're also speaking about higher gas prices. Food is going up. The White House is saying that, we're going to present this booster for the economy, but who will it boost? Whose economy will it boost? These are the topics that are on the table this morning, plus the president's rating, which I want to get to. We're talking with James Pomeroy, Dana Jones, Eric Mickelson, and Nick Sawalk. Before we do, though, let's go to Jim in Arlington, who's been waiting so kindly. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. I have a couple of questions for each member on the panel. I'd like to know what your opinion is on implementing a flat tax in the United States. Second of all, I'd like to know for the people who opposed President Bush's tax cut originally, how many of them actually refunded the check they were mailed by the government and sent it back to the government?
Well, amen. $600. Yeah. We paid for it, buddy. That's what the people are saying.
I'll collect those checks.
Come on, Jim. A lot of folks are saying, yeah, it was nice getting that one little lump sum, but they paid for it overall in the long run, and you might be paying for it with the cuts. What about that, Nick?
As far as...
Nick, you got to be a little quicker.
Yeah.
No, just kidding.
The flat tax would be a lot simpler, although really I think Eric brought up a good point. We have one of the finest deliberative bodies in the entire world in the Congress, and one of the things that they haven't been doing enough of is actually debating what we spend the American people's money on. And their ideas have been to just keep spending more of the American people's money, and let's throw a little bit more of the American people's money at a problem without really making the hard choices.
Eric, President Bush mentioned, and I don't know if it's coming true or not, but he would like to see that tax cut that the gentleman called in, Jim and Arlington called in. He'd like to see this permanently placed in the American future.
Well, I think that's a bad idea, but I think that the idea of a flat tax shouldn't be necessarily ruled out altogether. I think maybe I could conceive of a situation in which you exempt people below a certain income level from that income taxation altogether, and then you structure it so that it's able to calculate about the same amount of revenue that you get from the existing taxation scheme, and you make it a lot simpler as far as not having exemptions of all different sorts and whatnot.
Let's talk to Al in Arlington. Good morning, Al.
Some people think only middle class professional people matter. What if you're a cab driver?
Oh.
Well, then you're really getting socked by taxes. You're getting socked by the gas taxes. You're getting socked by the sales taxes. You're getting socked by the income taxes.
You're getting socked by medallion fees.
Yeah,
medallion fees. Are unbelievable.
You're getting socked. I mean, quite frankly, that's middle class to lower middle class. Some, depending on how many hours you drive, upper middle class. You can make some money driving a cab.
But you see, Al in Arlington is asking the question on the minds of a lot of Americans. Do you want a tax cut, or do you want an easement on taxes?
Well, he wants to make sure he's on the list of right people.
Unlike some others, Dana, cutting everyone's taxes.
Al, are you there?
Yeah.
Would you like tax cuts?
No, I'm I'm a liberal. I want money.
Well, at least you're honest about it, sir.
Let's not interrupt our guest. Go ahead, sir.
Thanks, David Jones.
That's rude.
Okay, Al, go ahead.
Well, I went to college in the 60s during the Vietnam War.
Uh-huh.
And all these people thought it was so righteous to be a liberal for peace. Now they're grown up, they're Republicans, and they work for the big corporations. Then we'll talk to me because I'm a 55-year-old messenger.
Isn't it funny if you're not driving a cab and you make $200,000 a year, how your thoughts really change?
Yeah.
You even change your religion on that stuff, don't you? Thank you very much, Al. Good question.
Okay.
Always. Okay. Right to the point, though. He's a cab driver. Most likely he's married and got children. He didn't say that. But representing other cab drivers who have got to really face this. And like you said, Jim, a lot of taxes.
And I'm sure that President Bush's across-the-board tax cut earlier
will help him.
Absolutely.
How is it going to help him?
It puts more money back into his
Jim
pocket.
Has a copy of this. The Washington Post doesn't have a full copy of this, but yet Jim
I'm talking about President Bush's overall agenda to cut taxes, and that he's already cut taxes.
It may help him because less people will be able to afford cars, so they'll have to take the taxi more often, you know. Put some money into
How can fewer people afford cars when President Bush puts more money back into your pocket?
Yeah, $300
really got me a new
car.
Well, you know, maybe, you know, for a lot of folks, $300 is good money.
But the one thing,
you know, I'll take it any day of the week.
We got to move on. One thing on that note, car sales are still up. So even at that, and low mortgage rates are still doing good with this crazy sluggish economy. All right, telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 in the Verizon wireless system. We have a question. We want to get through this very quickly because we've got to get to local politics, too. And I'd like for people to call in and tell us what you think. Ratings polls came out last week showing that President Bush's approval rating dropped at least 20%. It used to be 80-some. Now it's about in the 50s or the 60s. It has dropped according to recent polls. Also, Dick Cheney, vice president's job performance, has a critical drop. What happens and why does this happening and how does this account for the popularity in the White House?
Well,
are people scared of the war?
No, I don't think that anyone could sustain an 80 to 90% approval rating. So I think President Bush, everyone understood that the rating was going to go down. You know, we've got a war on terrorism and people support the president, people support the vice president. People are concerned about the war in Iraq, but I think, you know, most of the polls show.
What's their biggest concern?
People don't like war. I don't like war. I mean, no one does. But it is necessary sometimes. And when it's necessary, you have to step up and do it. And we're the world leader.
Especially when we've been attacked.
Yeah,
we have been.
By
the Iraqis.
September 11th,
they're
we were attacked by terrorists. And when Saddam Hussein were ever to transfer his weapons to Al-Qaeda, and they may already have, quite frankly, we have been attacked. Let's not forget that. This country was attacked, and that is why
it was attacked by Iraq's cohort.
And North Korea. They've attacked us too, right?
Well, I think that...
actually, if you'll remember the Korean War...
A while ago.
And you know what? They're ready for part two, aren't they?
Well, I think it's very important that we do not forget North Korea. They have some serious stuff going on there. But why is it so easy to forget them? Because they can be bought out and Iraq can't. Something else that I think...
are you saying Saddam's principles?
Let's get back to the original question.
Yeah, let's get back to the original question.
And that is the approval rating of the president's gone down.
I'm going to bring it back to national or local issues again. I think that the Republicans last month had a really hard hit with the African-American community and some of the minorities. There's a man named Trent Lott that made some pro-segregation remarks. I think that was very hurtful to the Republicans, and I think that, unfortunately, even though President Bush tried to step away from that, that's automatically going to be, you know, obviously Trent Lott had to step down. Senator Frist had to step in for him. And I think that it's issues like this that also the American people are looking at, not just the being afraid of war, but also pro-segregation comments.
I thought we were supposed to be talking about the war, and all of a sudden we're talking about Trent Lott.
No, we're talking about low approval rating.
Okay, guys, telephone number 301. Ooh, I'm glad I'm the referee in this whole thing. 301-230-0980, pound 980 in the Verizon wireless system if you'd like to get on this. We got a couple of calls on the line. As soon as my buddy Steve in there gives me the names, we'll get to them. Rich in D.C., let's go to Rich. Hello, Rich.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Fine.
I have a comment with respect to Bush's approval rating. I think part of the problem is the American people see the war in Iraq as a red herring. It seems to me that Bush is using the animosity and the tension with Iraq to divert attention from the real problem, which is the economy, which continues to slip. And people are frustrated with the fact that, you know, unemployment benefits are running out. They're trying to get those things straightened out. You continue to have big business scandals that drive businesses out, and people are losing jobs. That's the real problem. That's where our concentration should be, and that's what I would expect Congress to deal.
Not
the war in Iraq is secondary.
Okay, before you leave, Rich, don't leave me. Before I get back to the panel, let me get Norman and Frederick in here. I'd like to get his input, and then we can discuss both guys, okay? Norman, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, you heard what Rich said. Let's get your input.
I didn't hear him. I turned my radio off.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead. Well, Rich is basically saying that it's the war that's sort of camouflaging the real problem that caused the president's rating to go down, and that is the economy. That's the big culprit in this.
Oh, I think they're keeping their attention on Iraq in order to take it off the. My God, we've lost $1 trillion in the stock market and the economy. Why wouldn't you want to keep your mind off of it? You know it?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I think we ought to center on a lot of these discussions. Like we signed treaties and so forth to make the Middle East a nuclear-free zone, and then we slipped nuclear weapons to Israel, but nobody wants to talk about it.
Okay. All right. I think that was Norman getting off the line. Norman?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, you're here, sir. I think I was Rich in D.C. Okay, yeah. Jim Pomeli?
Well, my question for each of the panelists and for our folks on the phone here is, if, despite what you think the war is for or about or whatever, if Saddam Hussein is determined to have nuclear and our chemical weapons, should, yes or no question, should we go in and get them from him or not?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
Just let him keep them.
If Israel can keep nuclear weapons, then anybody else should be allowed to have them over there.
Thank you very much, Frederick. Okay, let's go to
Jerry,
my buddy.
Yeah, I have a comment about the declining ratings. I agree with both of the callers that, especially prior to the election, it was a great diversionary tactic to keep people's minds off the economy and whatnot. But I think actually Bush has gotten himself into a bit of hot water here, because I think that the North Korean response is, in fact, a reaction to basically, you know, his addition to them on this axis of evil by getting the nuclear power plants up and running again, preparing to create weapons. Basically, they're just covering themselves. I mean, they know that they're next on the hit list.
Okay, let's go to Alex and Chevy Chase. Good morning, Alex.
I'd like to speak with respect to President Bush's skepticism to act in North Korea. The reason he has not been as hard with North Korea as he has with Iraq, it's because the North Koreans have a million-man army, that they can deploy at any time, and the U.S. has only 37,000 troops on the border of on the 38th parallel. Also, North Korea has 11,000 artillery pieces aimed and within range of Seoul, South Korea. So if Bush took an extremely, unforgiving stance with North Korea, then the entire city of Seoul could be bombed to the ground.
Okay, thanks for your input.
Well, I had brought up North Korea before. This is a very serious situation, and I appreciate the caller. And does this then mean that it's just who's easier to pick on? Who's easier to win? I mean,
easier to pick on?
Yeah, North Korea is a serious issue. They have nuclear. They have more nuclear weapons than proof of.
Can I go to my Encarta encyclopedia and look up North Korea as compared to Iraq? Who has the most oil?
Iraq does, and that's a very good point.
Alex and Chevy Chase we talked with just now. Let's go to Patrick on Patrice on the cell phone. Good morning, Patrice.
Good morning. My question was, is anyone going to get back to the answering when the politicians are actually going to say where the money is going to go? And in regards to President Bush's approval rating dropping, I think it's dropping because he keeps harping over the fact that Iraq doesn't seem to be getting the point, but everything from the UN inspectors seems to be that they're cooperating fully. So until he backs off of that and says, let's wait and see, people are beginning to look at him as a warmonger and thinking that he is trying to start a war for his reelection campaign.
Well, but the thing is, we won't be fooled by him actually complying with demands. That's the oldest trick in the book, to actually do what we ask him to.
Well, the UN inspectors, who are certainly going to be more sympathetic to Saddam than most outside observers.
Why? The
UN inspectors have wimped out time and time again when they go in there. They give advance notice. They're starting to toughen up just a little bit. But you know what? I don't have a lot of respect for inspectors that can't find nuclear weapons chemical weapons when we have video of him using them on his population, and they say, well, gee, we've got video of them using chemical weapons on his own population, but we can't prove he's got
it. Even though we can't find them, let's bomb them anyway. God.
Jim,
who here doubts he has chemical weapons?
But, Jim, we have video of Bin Laden, but we can't find him. So, I mean, that video...
Well, we know where Saddam is.
We have a better idea
where Saddam is, so perhaps we should go in there and take care of his chemical weapons.
I don't know where Saddam is, you know what I mean?
Well, leave it up to the U.S. military. They'll find him for you.
Yeah, sure.
We have an interesting principle in this country.
The Cavaliers across the plains of the deserts of Iraq. Sherry in Silver Spring, save me. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning. I'll do my best to save you. First of all, Jim, I think, typifies why the president's ratings are down in his attitude of can't prove it, bomb him anyway. The reason I was calling was that I feel sadly the actions of the Senate with the upcoming, when the holidays were arriving, for them to go ahead and leave for vacation and not vote the funding for people on unemployment, to me typifies the fact that they're blind to the fact that there are people on unemployment, that there is a serious problem.
Almost 7%.
Finally caught up on their mortgages, can't do so anymore. It, to me, typifies the attitude of the leadership in the White House and the leadership in the legislative body, that there really is no concern for the people and what they're really going through.
Thank you very much, Sherry.
It's really simple. We just need to accuse the people on unemployment of having chemical weapons, and then everyone will pay attention to them.
So cynical. All right,
I don't know if the caller's still on the line or not.
No, the caller's gone.
Okay, I had a question for her as to whether if we are, and this is a question for every caller that calls in about it.
I got 4 minutes, and I
got
to move.
You got it. Okay.
I got 4 minutes. There's so much to cover, ladies and gentlemen, and that's the reason why these panels are so important. Democrats running the year 2004. Very quickly, let's get through our agenda here. 2004, now Gephardt's in it. The guy from North Carolina, they say, looks
John Edwards.
And John Edwards, along with Mr. Kerry in Massachusetts. What about it, Dana?
These are all wonderful people.
Will you come out with somebody that's really going to put pressure on the president?
I think, as in Gephardt's announcement, he made very clear exactly that he was putting pressure on the president, and that's why he's running for office. These are all viable candidates, all wonderful men who have served their country, and I look forward to see what happens in the next year.
But Gephardt carries baggage, along with Daschle. A lot of people don't like, necessarily, Mr. Gephardt's trends, because he went along with what? The resolution on Capitol Hill, which a lot of people felt that the Democrats should have taken a stronger opposition to the president.
Jerry, let's not forget, I think he lost the House 4 times in a row, too, right, as House leader. something like that. I mean, it was pretty disgraceful. And not obviously the Iraq resolution was a failing, at least in my estimation, on his part. But both he and Daschle, I mean, they're not opposition leaders.
But John Edwards shows new blood, does it not?
Yes, and he also brings the South with him, and this is a lot of what a lot of people are talking about, that he's from the South. The South is very important to winning. As we saw in the largest win was Rodney Alexander in Louisiana's 5th District, as well as Mary Landrieu from Louisiana.
Returning to Dixiecrats.
That's right, and I think that this will be very interesting. Jerry's giving me the wave, so.
Okay, guys. I got to get into local politics. Got to get there. We have about three minutes, and let's go through this very quickly. D.C. Mayor Anthony Williams, in his inaugural speech, says last week that he plans to do more. He wants more people buying in the District of Columbia and coming to D.C., despite the crime. No, he didn't say despite. He said he's going to do something about crime and schools. Very quickly, yes or no? Will he be
Am
able
I going?
To
no.
No. Will it be? Will Williams be able to pull it off?
I think D.C. is an increasingly attractive place to live. So I think, despite or it's going to happen.
Jim Palmer?
I think if he can keep on an upward trend, it'll happen.
China?
I think it will happen. This is a wonderful city.
Everybody likes it.
Everybody loves D.C.
Yeah, Tony Pepperoni. Anyway, moving along to Maryland now. The new Republican governor, Robert Ehrlich, plans to bring slot machines and bridge gaps with the poor and propose tax cuts. Sounds familiar. In a severe money deficit in the state, how successful will the governor be in Maryland facing the Democratic Assembly? Very quickly, Dana.
I think it's going to be a bumpy road. He's also in a fight with Peter Angelos because he wants to help bring a team to D.C.
What about that, Nick?
I think he's in the same position that the president is in, so much as he has out of control spending, and he's trying to do tax cuts at the same time. And I think that we need to have a little bit more transparency and a little more accountability.
I think the long Glendening nightmare is over. Thank God. Amen. for Ehrlich's victory.
That's like,
how can you be against
that's
your
like
own
passing on Marion Barry or something? You know, would have been the same coffin. I didn't say that. Anyway.
Well, I don't know. I think I think again the slot machines, and I think in D.C. the boxing or whatever. I mean, these are just pretty questionable ways to raise revenue in my estimation. I don't have a personal objection to them, but it just seems like a bad idea.
Eric, you got the last word. Eric Mickelson, along with Green Party, along with Nick Sawalk, Libertarian, Dana Jones, Democrat, and Jim Pomeroy, Republican. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Interesting. If the stimulus package doesn't make it, at least the stimulating conversation here will open your eyes. I'm Jerry Phillips, and we want to kind of close out thanking those who helped to put it together. Certainly, Steve Solomon, our technical producer, Courtney Layton, our administrator, Quentin Jackson, my good buddy, public affairs assistant, and simulcast operator, Paula Casey. Written and produced by yours truly, Jerry Phillips. Metro Talk is a WBIG Big 100 and WTEM Sports Talk 980 public affairs presentation. From Clear Channel Radio in Washington, D.C., take care of yourself, my friend. Much peace, much love. WBIG FM, Washington.